When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Talia.
And I'm Tanya.
And together we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Talia.
Welcome back, everyone, to what is going to be a very shocking Crimes and Consequences episode.
So it's a pisser.
Oh, man. The story I'm about to tell you is going to shock you.
Is it gruesome, too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Everyone needs to buckle up.
This is going to take you to a dark place near the outer limits of humanity, where even the most hardened killers rarely go.
Wow, what a setup, Talia.
It's true. You're going to be angry, and you're going to think about this story long after I'm done telling it. It's going to have an effect on you. So get ready to compartmentalize.
Oh, that's me all day, every day, dude.
I know, right? This is a story about 16-year-old Suzanne Capper and the unimaginable suffering she endured at the hands of the people she called her friends. A group of six delinquents that cannot be described as human beings. Are you ready?
Oh, boy. Phew.
If you guys haven't done so already, take 1 second, please, to hit the subscribe/follow button. And with that, I'm going to start.
Let's do it.
It was a chilly December morning in 1992 as Barry Sutcliffe and two of his coworkers drove along Comstall Road. They were carpooling together on their way to work. It was roughly 6:10 a.m., and the sun had yet to rise, and darkness blanketed the road. As the trio drove past Wornath Low, and that's a hillside in the greater Manchester area of England, known as Romilly, they noticed a strange figure in their headlights. Drawing closer, they realized that this figure stumbling alongside the road was a young woman, and something was terribly wrong with her. The three men quickly helped Suzanne Capper into the car, and they drove to the nearest home just down the road. Margaret and Michael Coop, they were an elderly couple. They were sleeping when they heard this pounding at their front door. Nothing, and I mean nothing, could prepare them for what they were about to see when they opened that door. When they opened the door, there was Suzanne. And according to Michael, her hands looked like ash. Her legs resembled raw meat, and her feet were completely charred. Her face was so swollen and bruised that her facial features were indistinguishable. Gone were Suzanne's front teeth, replaced by gums swollen and bloody. other teeth were chipped. Her legs were red and, as I said, raw from her upper thighs to where they met at her blackened feet. It was clear her head had been recently shaved and she had no eyebrows either. There were cuts on top of her head from what looked like a straight razor. Suzanne was extremely thirsty, but as a result of her hands being raw and blackened, she couldn't hold even a glass of water. With Margaret's assistance, Suzanne chugged 6 glasses of water in quick succession. And Margaret is quoted as saying, "I instinctively went to put my arms around her, but she pulled away because she couldn't stand to even be touched." While waiting for the medics to arrive, Suzanne remained conscious and was able to mutter her name. She repeatedly expressed her gratitude to the 3 men and Margaret and Michael for their assistance, and all the adults were just marveled by how polite Suzanne was given the circumstances and the amount of suffering she had to be in. So the day was December 14th, and Suzanne was immediately rushed to Withington Hospital. Doctors there examined her and estimated that 80% of her body was covered with burns. The chances of her survival were slim.
Oh, man.
They made the choice to put Suzanne in a medically induced coma, but not before she was able to identify all 6 of the perpetrators responsible for the 7 days of torture she had endured.
7 days?
7 days.
Oh, my God.
Her parents, her mom was Elizabeth and her stepdad was John, they were personally escorted to the hospital by police. When they arrived at Suzanne's bedside, her whole body was covered with bandages, except for her face. But her face was so broken, they couldn't recognize her and they couldn't positively ID her as their daughter. Suzanne's identity had to be confirmed by a partial thumbprint, the only part of her hand that had been completely burned. It gets worse.
Oh, no.
Let me tell you a little bit about Suzanne and how she got to where she's at in the story. Suzanne was born in Manchester, England in 1976. Her biological father abandoned the family, leaving her mother Elizabeth to take care of Suzanne, her older sister Michelle, and her older brother John. Later on, Elizabeth met and married John Capper, who ended up raising the children as his own. But that marriage fell apart in 1990 when Suzanne was 14 years old. For a while, she became a child of the system. That's what it's quoted everywhere in all the research I read. I'm thinking it's the equivalent to foster care in the United States, but was later released and ended up between her mom's house and her stepdad's house and on friends' couches. She was almost a vagabond of sorts. One day, Suzanne saw a teen boy sitting on the street curb who appeared to be upset. And Suzanne has a very kind nature, and this naturally drew her to this teen boy. She went over and asked him if he was all right. That was the first time she met Clifford Pook Hayes, who would years later be instrumental in her brutal torture and death. It was through Clifford that Suzanne met a woman named Jean. That's Clifford's sister. Jean was much older than Suzanne. She was in her 20s, and she took advantage of Suzanne's desire to belong and to be needed. Suzanne frequently babysat for Jean's 3 small children for free, and she would spend countless nights sleeping on Jean's couch. Jean's influence on Suzanne was tremendous, and Suzanne was very impressionable. Oftentimes, Jean would convince Suzanne to miss school, or she would even pull Suzanne out of her Mauston Brook High School to have her help clean offices with her, because Jean cleaned offices part-time. She would pocket all but 5 pounds of Suzanne's earnings for herself. Suzanne ended up missing a lot of school, and her attendance was described as erratic. It got to the point that a truancy officer contacted Suzanne's parents. Elizabeth and John, they didn't like Jean. And they confronted Jean about pulling Suzanne out of school. During this confrontation, Jean threatened to burn down their house.
Wow.
But she didn't stop seeing Suzanne, and this relationship continued on between Suzanne and Jean for roughly 2 more years. By the time Suzanne was 16, she was spending most of her nights at her ex-stepfather John's house, where she lived with her older sister Michelle, too. Sometimes she would disappear for a few days, but eventually she always returned. Suzanne's sister Michelle was introduced to Jean and even lived at Jean's house briefly in the summer of 1992. But she eventually moved out because Jean's home was no place where you would want to live. Let me tell you why. In 1992, 26-year-old Jean lived in this small Victorian terraced home on 97 Langworthy Road in Mauston, England. And for those who don't know where the hell that is, it is in the northeastern edge of Manchester in Britain. And for those who don't know what a Victorian terraced home is, such as myself, it is described as a row of attached brick dwellings that share common sidewalls. We call them townhouses, pretty much, in the United States. And they resemble something you might find in New York City. 97 Langworthy Road. That particular area in Mauston was infested with drugs, and Jean earned a living by selling drugs and dealing with stolen cars and their parts. When I say selling drugs, we're not just talking about weed. We're talking about amphetamines, heroin, and some hardcore stuff. The door to this house was always revolving with dubious characters coming in and out all hours of the night. I mean, it's the epitome of your trash home.
And she's got kids?
3. I mean, she's only 26, so they have to be young. Speaking of her kids, protective services had been called on Jean multiple times in case you thought she was mom of the year. But they failed Jean's children miserably. Apparently, a living room filled with spare car parts, including car seats that were used as chairs.
Oh my God.
And industrial-sized kitchen scales, which obviously they used to measure drugs. Apparently that had no effect on Child Protective Services. They didn't see a reason to remove the children.
Wow.
Jean had recently divorced from the father of her children. Now, there's a lot of characters in here in the story, so I'm going to give them some handy-dandy nicknames.
I love when you do that.
So that way we can remember them. Her ex, his name was Glenn Powell. And from now on, we're going to call him Ex-Glenn.
Ex-Glenn, got it.
Ex-Glenn. The two remained, quote-unquote, friendly, if you know what I mean. An ex-Glenn could often be found at the 97 Langworthy residence doing drugs and doing Jean.
Bow, chick-chick-a-bow, bow.
As if the story couldn't get any more white trash, I'm now going to introduce you to Bernadette McNeely. 24-year-old Bernadette moved 3 doors down from Jean in the summer of 1992. She lived at 91 Langworthy Road, and she also had 3 small children that she was supporting through her monthly welfare check. Bernadette and Jean, they were like 2 peas in a pod. They basically became inseparable. They could often be found at the Kestrel Pub 2 blocks away on Hugo Street, where they like to party, drink, have fun. Who gives a fuck about the kids at our house? Only a few months after moving into 91 Langworthy Road, Bernadette decided she really needed to be a little bit more in the midst of the action. So Bernadette and her 3 children moved in with Jean. So now there are 6 small children and 2 adults living in a 2-bedroom townhouse.
And let alone whoever's couch surfing.
Exactly, which is often Suzanne, but other people too. Now, 97 Langworthy Road was only 7 minutes from Suzanne's stepdad John's house, if you're walking. The 2 women, Bernadette and Jean, they weren't very well liked in their neighborhood. I know it comes as a surprise. They seem so charming.
What? Get out of here.
At one point, they set fire to one of their neighbor's laundry just out of spite.
Wow.
And this house, it was a zoo filled with people and chaos.
Well, six kids, I can imagine the chaos.
And this is where Suzanne spent a lot of her time. The two women there, they didn't treat her very well. In fact, they treated her like shit. They bullied her. They took advantage of her. But Suzanne tolerated it and even went out of her way to try to please them, to make them happy. Her parents and her sister advised Suzanne to stay away from the house, with her stepdad, John, referring to it as evil. But Suzanne was wayward, and she didn't listen. In November of 1992, just a few weeks before the assault on Suzanne, Suzanne showed up at her mom's work. It was called Calderwood Adult Daycare Center. She often came there to see her mom because she didn't live with her mom. She was living with her stepdad. When she showed up, she had a swollen black eye. Her mom asked her if she'd gotten into a fight with another girl over a boy. And Suzanne responded by simply shrugging her shoulders. Then she asked her mom if she could stay the night with her. But her mom told her no. According to Suzanne's mother, Elizabeth, she just moved into a new flat earlier that very same day and told Suzanne her room wasn't ready. She told Suzanne that by Christmas Eve, she could come and stay with her at her house. However, this was contradicted by Suzanne's sister, Michelle. Michelle says that she was there and her mother told Suzanne that her new boyfriend wouldn't want Suzanne staying there and turned her away. Either way, Suzanne wasn't allowed to stay at her mom's home. Where she went that night, I don't exactly know, but what I do know is that Suzanne told other people that she received the black eye as a result of being tied up for 4 days and assaulted by Jean. But no one believed her. Jean later admits that, yeah, she did beat up Suzanne and give her that black eye. She justified it by saying that Suzanne had suggested that Jean have sex with a man for money. And apparently this was very offensive to Jean and threw her in a fit of rage.
That offended her?
Yes. Now, whether Suzanne was actually tied up for 4 days or not, I can't confirm, but given what I'm about ready to tell you,
believable.
Yes, it's very believable. A little after the black eye incident, pubic lice plagued 97 Langworthy Road. Not only were Jean and Bernadette sharing a home and drugs, they were also sharing their men.
Oh no, ex-Glenn's getting around?
Yes, there's ex-Glenn, but then there's also 24-year-old Bernadette's 16-year-old boyfriend,
what?
Anthony Dodson.
What?
Why not?
Why not, I guess. Whatever.
It's legal in England at 16. I looked that up too. Anthony not only had sex with Bernadette, but on occasion, he would have sex with Jean, who, of course, was sleeping with ex-Glenn. They all contracted pubic lice, and they were pretty pissed off about it. During one discussion with teen Anthony, I'm going to call him teen Anthony so you remember he's 16.
Okay.
With teen Anthony, Jean claimed to know the origin of the pubic lice. She said that it must have came from Suzanne. The reason why she thought that is because Bernadette and Jean slept in the dining room together on a bed. And sometimes Suzanne would sleep on that same bed. And so Jean concluded that that's how they got the lice from Suzanne sleeping on the same sheets that they've slept on.
So it was just because she was sleeping there. They all weren't getting it on with Suzanne.
Exactly.
Okay. Man, sex ed failed these people.
I just like how they're sleeping together on a bed.
In the fucking dining room?
In the dining room. Teen Anthony told Jean he was pretty sure he got pubic lice from Bernadette. But Jean was adamant it was from Suzanne. And both her and Bernadette were really pissed off because they had to shave off their pubic hair, which was their method of ridding pubic lice.
Okay.
Now, around the same time, Bernadette noticed her pink duffel coat was missing. And although the house was constantly filled with drug addicts, thieves, and unsavory characters, she blamed Suzanne for stealing her $50 jacket. For the next few days, Jean, Bernadette, Teen Anthony, and ex-Glenn conspired to get revenge on Suzanne. On December 7th of 1992, Jean and Bernadette showed up at Suzanne's dad's house wanting to speak with Suzanne. They told her that a young man she had a crush on was hanging out at their house and that she should come over. Eager to please and excited to see the guy, Suzanne left her home at 6 Bewley Walk and joined Jean and Bernadette for the 7-minute walk back to 97 Langworthy Road. And this is where the shit turns into a shitstorm. But before I go into the 7 days of torture that Suzanne experienced, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So we're back and you need a
buckle up
or compartmentalize
or curb
or both. Are you ready, Tanya?
Yes.
Tanya giggles when she's nervous and
yes,
she's obviously nervous.
I'm sorry,
nervous.
It's not a funny story at all. Although I am trying to find a little humor in pubic lice, and I'm sorry. Whew, no more giggles.
Immediately after entering the two-story home, Suzanne was accosted by ex-Glenn and then dragged into the kitchen by both ex-Glenn and Teen Anthony. While Teen Anthony held her down, ex-Glenn shaved all of Suzanne's hair off her head and her eyebrows with a straight razor, cutting her all over the place. When they were done, they forced Suzanne to sweep up the hair from the floor and put it in a trash bin. Then the group grabbed a garbage bag and they placed it over her head. They made her walk about, staggering blindly throughout the house as they beat her. Jean and Bernadette took turns hitting Suzanne with a 3-foot-long wooden spoon and fork. You remember those wooden decorations people have on their walls of massive spoons and forks?
Yes.
That's what they beat her with. They also whipped her with a belt, and when she fell down, they kicked her on the floor as she lay in the fetal position. This went on for hours, and then Suzanne was dragged into the bathroom. In the bathroom, she was forced to take off her pants, forced to take off her underwear, and made to shave off her pubic hair in front of the group. This was extremely difficult for Suzanne because the severe beating had resulted in her basically being unable to move her left arm. I read somewhere that her shoulder was dislocated.
Ooh.
And her right hand flopped around, and it was described as basically useless. That being said, she was ordered to shave her pubic hair. Suzanne spent the rest of the day and night locked in a small cupboard, weeping. The next morning, she was moved from the downstairs cupboard to another cupboard upstairs and once again locked inside. But the six children of Jean and Bernadette, they could hear Suzanne's constant sobbing and pleading to be set free, and they found this disturbing. As a result, Suzanne was swiftly moved from 97 Langworthy to 91 Langworthy, which was Bernadette's empty house three doors down. Now, when Bernadette had moved out of that home, she left behind quite a few things. One of those items was a box spring. It was in a back room. The box spring was flipped over, displaying five horizontal wooden beams, which held the box spring together. So it's got five wooden planks, so to speak, on it. Suzanne, once again, half nude, was tied spread eagle to the wooden beams of this. Socks were shoved in her mouth to gag her, and she was blindfolded. But that's not the worst of it. Large headphones, you know, the old school foam headphones, they were placed over her ears, and one song was put on a continuous loop for Suzanne to listen to over and over again at full volume. This wasn't just any song. It was a rave song by 150 Volts called, quote, "Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?"
No.
It's a song that incorporates clips from Child's Play 3, the Chucky horror movie. I listened to the song. It's extremely doo-doo-doo. It's rave, right? It's rave. And in it, you can hear Chucky say things like, "Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?" One of the last lines of the song says, quote, "No, please, we're friends till the end, remember?" And then Chucky says, "This is the end."
Uh-oh. She had to listen to this over and over.
For 5 days.
Oh my God. At full blast?
At full blast.
Wow. Oh, can you imagine?
No.
Like, I'd go fucking nuts.
That was, yeah, the point, right? She was tied down, gagged, blindfolded, and forced to lay in her own excrement and urine, not being allowed to get up one single time for 5 days. They would inject her with amphetamines so she couldn't fall asleep.
Oh, that's cruel. I mean, this is all cruel.
In the meantime, they were also injecting themselves with heroin and amphetamines. During those 5 days, while tied up, Suzanne was repeatedly burned with cigarettes. In fact, Bernadette had purposely put out a cigarette right in the middle between Suzanne's eyes, leaving a burn mark there. Jean and Bernadette would take turns beating Suzanne. Bernadette's behavior grew so odd that even Jean was a bit disturbed by it. Bernadette began taking on the role of Chucky from Child's Play.
No, no, no.
And each time before her torture sessions would begin, she would remove the headphones from Suzanne and say to her in a Chucky voice, "Chucky's coming to play." Suzanne would immediately panic when she heard this. That single line was terrorizing to her. One of Jean's beating sessions lasted for 2 hours straight. By the fifth day of this, Suzanne's face was swollen and distorted, and she no longer looked like a human. It was on that day that Jean, Bernadette, Teen Anthony, and ex-Glenn decided to bring other people to 91 Langworthy Road so they could see Suzanne battered and bound. They showed 18-year-old Clifford Hayes, who is Jean's brother. They showed him Suzanne. And they also, at the same time, brought over a guy named Jeffrey Lee. Now, Jeffrey Lee was a local thief and drug addict who had been arrested previously for assaulting his disabled 86-year-old grandmother.
So he's a real gem.
He's a real gem, too. When the whole group came in and saw Suzanne, the smell that emanated from her was just wretched. Bro Cliff. That's what I'm calling for brother
Bro
Cliff. Bro Cliff and car thief Jeffrey suggested Suzanne be given a bath. Everybody agreed that was a great idea. But they ended up giving her not an ordinary bath.
Of course not.
Together, the six of them filled the tub with water. Then they added bleach and concentrated disinfectant.
Oh my God.
Suzanne was dragged to the tub, still blindfolded and gagged, with a wire brush.
No, Talia, stop.
They began scrubbing her body.
No.
They did.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
The wire brush in and of itself would have caused great injury to her skin. But when coupled with the bleach and the disinfectant, it resulted in the removal of several layers of her skin.
Oh my God.
And keep in mind, the skin is now exposed to bleach.
Yes.
Now, in case you thought that Brocliff and car thief Jeff would have any compassion after seeing Suzanne, you are wrong. In fact, Brocliff, he instructed Suzanne while she was still in the bathtub to open her mouth, telling her, quote, "I'm going to rip your teeth out." Teen Anthony, Jean, and Bernadette stood by the doorway and watched as Brocliff removed her gag and began repeatedly hitting her in the teeth with pliers.
Oh my God.
He ended up chipping and breaking some of them, but he wasn't satisfied with what he'd done. He then placed the pliers tightly over one of her front teeth, and he pulled over and over again. Eventually, he pulled so hard that Suzanne's head went forward and a snapping sound could be heard. He had removed her front tooth, root and all, and left an exposed nerve.
Oh, I'm going to cry. This is disgusting.
You know how bad an exposed nerve would feel?
Yes, I've had teeth. I mean, I've got a crown. I mean, yes.
I've had teeth.
I've had teeth, yes. Oh my God, Talia.
Well, everyone was laughing. He did it again, and he pulled out her other front tooth, saving both of them as a sort of trophy. The bloody pliers were later found by police on the shelf next to the Christmas tree at 97 Langworthy Road. Suzanne was then tied back up to the box spring. Shortly thereafter, an 18-year-old friend of the group, his name was David Hill, he was called up and asked by the group if he wouldn't mind sitting in the 91 Langworthy home for a few hours. He didn't know why, but he was like, okay. He showed up to the house, and when he got there, he was greeted by car thief Jeff. From the living room, he could hear teen Anthony shouting in the back bedroom, "You shut up, you slag." I don't know what slag means. It means probably slut, right?
Yeah, it's like an insult, yeah.
I know it's an insult, but I don't know exactly what it is. Guess it doesn't matter. And he heard talk about dentistry.
Oh, no.
David asked car thief Jeff what was going on back there. And that's when car thief Jeff brought him back to see Suzanne. David just stood there in shock. According to David, quote, "She had a sort of cloth over her face. From just above where her eyebrow should be, she had a bit of dried blood on her lip, and she had no hair," end quote. At this point, David says he was afraid for his own safety.
Well, no shit, right?
The rest of the group ended up leaving the house, and he was left alone with Suzanne. She was naked, bloody, bound, but there was no gag in her mouth. Suzanne pleaded with David to help her. David didn't know Suzanne, and he asked her, you know, "What's your name?" And she said, "My name is Suzanne. Could you please just untie me?" But David told her, "I'm sorry, but I can't help you." He would later tell authorities, quote, "I thought they would batter me. If I said anything, they'd have gotten me, wouldn't they? I didn't know what to do. I was too shocked to do anything."
You can't call the police?
No, he did nothing. That day, while Suzanne lay tied and broken, teen Anthony and car thief Jeff, they actually went to meet with Suzanne's sister, Michelle. They met with her fiancé, Paul, and they helped him with some car repairs. Paul was acquaintances with them, and he said later on, they never gave any hint that his future sister-in-law was being tortured and they were a part of it. He would have never thought they were capable of such inhumane acts. By this time, Michelle and her stepdad John were growing concerned over the whereabouts of Suzanne. As I said, she'd been gone for days before, but now it was going on a week, and that was really unusual. In addition, when Michelle reached out to all of Suzanne's friends, none of them had seen her, so nobody knew where she was. And Michelle and John decided it was time to report her missing to the police. When word got out to Jean, Bernadette, Teen Anthony, ex-Glenn, Broke Clifford, and car thief Jeff that the police were going to be called, they all agreed it was time to end the fun and get rid of Suzanne. It was roughly 5 a.m. on the morning of December 14th when Suzanne was dragged into the trunk of a stolen white Fiat Panda. I never heard of a panda.
Me either.
Must be a European thing. Jean, ex-Glenn, Bernadette, and teen Anthony, they hopped in the car too. And together, the group drove approximately 15 miles to a secluded scrubland near Warneth Low on the outskirts of the town of Stockport. I sound like I know what I'm talking about, but I don't. I'm just letting everybody know I don't. The mood in the car was later described as cheery. Once the car stopped, Suzanne was forced out of the trunk. But because she'd been restrained for so long and she was so battered, she was too weak to hold herself up and she fell. Bernadette then pushed her down the embankment into some bramble where Suzanne landed on her stomach.
Isn't it like thorny?
Yes.
Ugh.
Grabbing a gas can from the Fiat, Bernadette then doused Suzanne with gas or petrol. Ex-Glenn tried to light a piece of paper, kind of to use it as a taper. But after two attempts, he gave up and decided to just hold the flame to Suzanne's back.
Oh.
Suzanne instantly burst into flames. Teen Anthony said, quote, "She went straight up in flames and was screaming. The flames lit up the whole forest," end quote. As Bernadette watched Suzanne burn, she began singing the lyrics to Disco Inferno.
Oh my God.
Belting out, "Burn, baby, burn. What a bitch."
What the fuck is the matter with these people?
I don't know. It's super scary. Convinced Suzanne was dead, the four killers hopped back in the car and they took off to 97 Langworthy Road, stopping on their way to grab some pop.
Where are these kids?
Well, they're being watched at the house by Bro Cliff and car thief Jeff.
That's right. They were there.
Yes, eagerly awaiting their return. But as we know, Suzanne didn't die. Somehow, after everything I just described to you happened to her, she managed to crawl up the embankment filled with bramble and stagger roughly a quarter mile down the road before being spotted by the three men on their way to work. Now, I told you that Suzanne was put into a medically induced coma. But immediately prior to that, she gave the names of everybody I just talked about and the address of where they lived. 4 days after being rescued, Suzanne died of organ failure as a result of the severe burns that just destroyed her body. She was buried at the Blackley Cemetery on January 18th. So it took a while to bury her.
That poor girl.
Her autopsy was never released. The only thing that we know for sure is that her teeth were missing and she was severely burned. The 97 Langworthy home was raided at 7:30 p.m. that evening, and everybody involved was immediately arrested. I read that Jean and Bernadette were laughing about it.
When they were arrested?
When they were arrested, and everybody denied being involved with Suzanne's torture and murder. But eventually, teen Anthony, at the urging of his father, confessed. A trial commenced on November 16th, 1993, and it lasted approximately 22 days.
Did they all get tried together?
Yes. At least four of them did.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure all six. It got a little confusing because there's six of them, but I'm pretty sure all six got tried together for various crimes. False imprisonment, to murder, to torture. The jury deliberated for 9 hours and 52 minutes before reaching their verdicts. As the verdicts were read, two jurors openly wept, and Jean and Bernadette began screaming.
Fuck them.
Because they're very dramatic.
Right.
Ex-Glenn, he turned towards Suzanne's family, and he said one word to them. Do you know what it was? You don't.
No.
Revenge.
Oh, you know what?
He can fuck off.
Right.
So here's what they got. Are you ready to be pissed off?
Oh, man.
So I've talked about the crimes. Let's talk about the consequences. Bro Cliff, he was 18 at the time. He served 8 years for pulling out Suzanne's teeth, amongst other things. Car thief Jeffrey, he served less than 5 years for his part, which included showing her off and helping her take a bleach bath. Teen Anthony Dodson, he got 16 years. Ex-Glenn Powell, he got 25 years for igniting Suzanne on fire alive. Jean Powell, who now goes by Jean Galipsy, she got 25 years. And Bernadette McNeely, she got 25 years. But she got out early.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you.
See, I would think she was the worst.
She was the worst. Her and Jean.
Yes.
Let me tell you a little bit about her early release and her life in prison, because it's fucked up. And by the way, they're all released now. They're all free. In 1996, Bernadette was housed in the H wing of the HM prison, Durham, which also happened to be where Rosemary West and Myra Hindley were housed at the same time.
Man, celebrity jail.
Right? I know. During a routine security check of her cell, steamy sexual love letters between Bernadette and the prison governor, Mike Martin, were discovered.
Is he like the warden?
He's somewhere high up.
What?
I don't know the prison system in England, but he was described as the governor, so it sounds pretty high
up. Yeah, it sounds pretty high up.
The love letters indicated that the two had sex in the prison gym, in her prison cell, and in his office.
What?
Prison Governor Martin, who was a married man,
oh my God,
resigned before he could be disciplined.
That was probably a good idea.
Now, in 2013, a judge was told that Bernadette was, quote unquote, a model prisoner who was filled with remorse for her horrific crime and that she had made exceptional progress in prison. She took phys ed classes, horticulture classes.
Oh, fuck you with your horticulture. Seriously.
And she spoke as a mentor for a group called Last Chance Kids, teaching them to stay clear of crime. And the judge said Bernadette, quote, showed a strong measure of remorse and contrition. As a result, he knocked a year off of her sentence. In 2014, she was released and she changed her name to Bernadette Gardner. Horticulture Gardner.
Seriously.
In 2019, she was working in a place called M&S. It's a BP garage in Telford, England. And there's this Facebook group called Pedos Exposed.
No. Oh.
They approached the manager of M&S and asked how he could have possibly agreed to hire her. His response was, quote, she served her time. What's it got to do with you? One of the lead detectives in this case, his name was Detective Peter Wall. He had this quote that I wanted to share with everybody. He said, and I quote, psychological reports say that these are absolutely sane individuals. It's frightening that they are such ordinary people, that there is nothing special about any of them, end quote.
That is really scary because, I mean, if someone is a psychopath or what have you, you can blame it on that. But when you're just a regular, sane person and you do these heinous things, and it makes you wonder.
Yeah. And it was described as if they were almost trying to one-up each other on how they could torture Suzanne, almost like a competition in essence. Anyway, that is a really horribly sad story of Suzanne Capper. And there were a ton of resources that I used, and you can find them in our show notes because there's just too many here. But I did want to give a particular shout out to two podcasts that I listened to that had this Give Us Morgue. It was really good. They were fun ladies. And Mens Rea. The rest you can find on our show notes.
God damn.
I know.
That was a bad one.
I know. And you're going to think about it on your way home.
I am. It's quite disturbing.
Let's do something to lighten the mood.
Okay.
How about review the reviewer?
Oh, my favorite. Yes, let's do that.
Let's do that. All right, Tanya, I'm going to do one that was on Apple titled No Respect.
Uh-oh, this isn't a good one, is it?
No, it's definitely not a good one. Lots of victim blaming and lots of giggling when going through autopsy reports of victims. It's honestly rude and revolting. Grow up.
Yeah, Talia, grow up.
You fucking grow up.
And yeah, I giggle. Okay, fine. When shit is uncomfortable, I get uncomfortable and I giggle. And this person, whoever he or she is, obviously doesn't listen to us.
Well, I know who this person is because I, in a polite way, told her fuck off on Facebook. So while I'm growing up, she can go fuck off.
Amen. One, she gets a one star.
One star. One star.
One star.
Let's do something more positive, okay?
Yes, let's switch gears.
This one is titled Brutal Podcast. It's like you guys... I'm sorry, Tanya. Okay, sorry, guys. It's like... sorry. Oh, shit. All right, I'm sorry. It's like you guys...
Do you need me to read it?
I got it. It's like you guys went to the sewers and pulled the nastiest turds out to show them off. Great show. 5 stars.
Who wrote that lovely review?
I think it was Erica Walters.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I think that is quite an interesting compliment. That's a 5-star if I've ever seen one. Oh, thank you.
Oh, that's a good one.
See, on that note, we can have a little laugh.
Exactly.
I want to remind you guys, if you haven't done so already, to go ahead and hit the subscribe/follow button. And also, if you don't want to hear commercials, you can join our Patreon, where you can listen to early releases and ad-free releases, plus exclusive episodes only to our patron members. And you can get that all by going to patreon.com/TNTCrimes. Or you can go to our website, crimesandconsequences.com, and learn more. You can also subscribe to our Apple channel and get the early releases and ad-free episodes and exclusives.
And you only have to go to your podcast app on your Apple phone to find that.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Hardcore True Crime. And if you guys have any suggestions, we get lots of them. You can email us. We look at every single one. Anything else, Tanya?
No, I just wanted to clarify the Apple episodes mm-hmm. are the same episodes that you can find on Patreon, in case anyone wonders.
Yeah, it gets a little confusing.
Mm-hmm. It does.
That being said, we appreciate every one of you for taking the time to listen to us. Thank you to all those who have given us such positive feedback on the reviews. Obviously, we can't read them all out loud to everybody, but we do read them.
I'd love to. We would be sitting here just patting ourselves on the back, though, because we do have quite a few nice ones. So we do appreciate all of your good reviews.
Yes, we do. Anything else, Tanya?
Nope. That'll do it this week.
All right. Until next week.
Don't kill each other.
And stay safe.
Bye.
Bye.